This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Hello, good morning. You're listening to The Morning Run. I'm Melissa Idris with Julian Ng and Ibrahim Sani. 6:46 right now. News is that Malaysia has slipped 7 places in the World Economic Forum's Global Competitiveness Report. Now, we used to be ranked at 18th place, but now we're at the 25th place. So if you look at 25th out of 140 countries, so this is quite a staggering decline, guys, after all the work we've done to climb up in the rankings.
That's right. It brings us back 5 years, back to 5 years ago when we were last number 25 and our top spot, as you mentioned, Melissa, number 18. MITI actually blames politics, among other things. The MITI minister, Dato Sri Mustafa Mohamad, said that certain quarters have caused these negative perceptions unfairly.
Yeah, if I could just quote him, because I think his comment verbatim is really quite interesting. There is also the issue of perception due to the irresponsible act of certain parties which continue to spread unfounded and baseless allegations about domestic political developments and the state of our economy. Now, I understand what he's trying to say, that there is a certain negative perception towards Malaysia, but I don't think it can be so easily dismissed. It's definitely contributing factor, I'm sure.
Yeah, so this blame game will continue to go on. What is also interesting is that the two pillars that we actually recorded a steep drop has got nothing to do with politics. In fact, it has everything to do with education. The first pillar is health and primary education. We dropped steeply in that sector. The second area is higher education and training. Now, of course, there are some plus points. We did fairly well with financial market development, market efficiency, as well as tech readiness. If I may add, I think it's about our readiness for fintech development and our readiness for Islamic financial markets. But this doesn't take away the fact that our education system is doing very poorly.
I mean, guys, don't you think that is the most worrying thing that has come out from this ranking? I mean, yeah, we've slid 7 spots, but the fact that we recorded a huge drop in those two pillars, primary education and higher education and training. I mean, essentially, the education system is suffering, and it takes a world competitiveness report to hopefully open our eyes to that.
Yeah, and I feel that relating to the statement that came out of the minister, it doesn't really hit the nail in explaining our cratering in the competitiveness index. You really got to get down to it and open up and say what we are lacking in. And something like education is not something that can be just redeveloped overnight. But the other reasons that MITI gave were also not totally believable. I think they raised the fact that other countries also faltered, for example, Germany, Japan, Thailand, Indonesia. But this is exactly what competitiveness is about. Mm. You got to be competitive when times are bad as well. So the question is, can you do it like Singapore, right? They remain competitive.
They're number two.
Yeah, no matter what happens, they are still competitive. How can we get to those kinds of situations?
Yes.
Well, India made the biggest leap despite the challenging times. They leaped 16 spots. They're now number 39.
Now, that is not surprising if you ask me, because they have been trying to improve on many sectors. But it's also surprising that Malaysia is far more competitive than other countries, namely South Korea, China and Iceland.
That's quite interesting.
It's very interesting. Particularly when, we would assume that the perception in South Korea would be very competitive, but it seems that according to the WEF index, we're better than them.
Yeah, that's surprising. Compare Hyundai to Proton, right? It would be, I mean, from a perception and sentiment viewpoint, you would think that South Korea would be more competitive than us, but they're not. China, the lowest cost producer in the world, it's touted, also less competitive than Malaysia. So there you go, some plus points as well.
Vietnam is at number 60th on the rankings for world competitive, but I'm sure they will continue to climb. One of the news that have come out from the country this morning is that they've given the green light for the biggest brewer there, Sabeco, to list their shares in Ho Chi Minh by December. Now, this is all part of a plan to increase privatization within the country, and it really does offer investors kind of a chance at getting into Asia's third biggest beer market after China and Japan.
Yeah, multiple advantages from that kind of move. First, it raises money for the government, and it also opens up a lot of these GLCs to accountability and international investor scrutiny. And China is also trying to do the same thing with their state-owned enterprises to list more and more of them.
You know, this is part of the government's plan to divest 10 state-owned enterprises, and they want to boost the stock market as well. And this is something interesting. If you compare the stock markets of, say, Malaysia and Vietnam, we're still there in terms of leadership. But I'm not surprised if...
Only compared to Vietnam. Not to Singapore or Hong Kong.
Not to Singapore or Hong Kong. But I think, if anything, this is a step in the right direction, because not only are they trying to boost the stock market size and participation, and also perhaps try to get retail investors to jump in and invest in the equities, but it's also a step away from state-owned enterprises to take on riskier assets, right? Because at the end of the day, a state enterprise has to bear the need for the people, and I don't know whether they can do so in the long term.
Interesting that KL is about 7 to 8 times bigger than Vietnam in terms of market size. But I think we can't rest on our laurels because the stock market, I guess, the kind of activities that go on there is a reflection of economic activity as well. And frontier markets like Vietnam, Indonesia, Cambodia, Philippines, these countries are playing catch up.
Yeah, for sure, for sure. But just coming back home, PNB has come out to say that they are looking to increase investments in private equity. Now, Group Chairman Tan Sri Wahid Omar said that PNB is already investing in many private equity companies, in many private companies through its PNB Equity Resource Corp, and that some of these companies have been very successful. I just find the timing very interesting because not too long ago, we were reporting that Co-op wanted to increase its allocation in private equity.
This is a struggle for returns because we see that the global situation is not very good unless you put a lot of money into foreign assets like the US market, which has done very well. And at different points over the last 4 or 5 years, Japan has done well as well. But that would mean that you would have to raise the foreign investments. I think for people like Co-op and PNB, the immediate sentiment is that they would have a lot invested locally. So it's really a big leap from raising your foreign investments to private equity. It's really going to the more extreme spectrum of risk-taking.
Yeah.
Private equity is expensive. The deal structures are opaque. And there's a lot of money chasing too few deals.
Mm. Yeah, there's a lot of truth in that statement. Why not just lift that so-called soft ban on investing locally, right? Or the preference of investing locally. Because if you
That's
think
what
about
EPF
it,
is doing. Actually.
Yeah, because there are studies that show that PE or private equity, whether or not they give good returns, and according to one study, the Center of Economic and Policy Research, it's a clear no in the fact that PE does not give that good returns. And I guess it kind of makes sense because the senior CEPR economist, he argues that since 2006, it hasn't beaten the stock market. And according to some recent evidence, too many PE buyout shops actually compete against too many large corporations. So it's small money chasing after even smaller assets that are available.
Yeah. So then why would Co-op and PNB then be interested in going down this road?
Yeah, I guess for many of these investing institutions, it's another option to raise returns. Bear in mind that their investments into private equity right now are tiny. We're talking about just 1% to 2% of total asset sizes. So it's not yet a cause for big worry right now because they have not made huge transfers into private equity. So I think it's still okay at this point in time. They just want to, I hope, they just want to explore options in private equity.
Yeah, but the pressure is there, right? Because just yesterday, PNB actually announced a dividend of 6.1 cent per AS1M unit. That's basically 6.1% for dividend returns last year.
Amanah Saham, one Malaysia for you and me.
Yes, okay. and for the ASB holders, it's actually far higher than that. Well, not far higher, but higher than that, right? So because of this, it's a lot of pressure on PNB to actually chase after high-yielding assets. And I think a quick answer to them is private equity. So I really don't know how that may mash up in the future.
On our radar this morning, of course, is also EcoWorld Berhad, because they've announced that their third quarter earnings has increased, was almost five times higher at just under 45 million ringgit. They say that this was thanks to higher sales from the launched projects during that quarter.
This is coming on the back of poor performance in the rest of the property sector. I mean, the RERA, for example, which represents housing developers, they are trying to engineer ways of trying to prop up sales in the sector, which has remained in doldrums. But EcoWorld could do it because I think they're more focused on the affluent sector, where the customers have a lot of money. So they're not
affected.
They're not restricted by a lot of these provisions.
Yeah, remember that we keep on saying that loan growth is actually quite small, particularly when banks are revising downwards their loan growth. I guess that doesn't capture that affluent sector because they don't necessarily need that kind of loans to actually acquire these kind of assets.
I guess when I read news that EcoWorld's earnings are now five times higher, it's mixed messages to me, because you read about the property sector slowing down, how some property developers are deferring launches. But I guess it depends on what segment of the market you play in, right?
Exactly. And I think that it really highlights also the idea that strong affluence highlights the inequality that exists in our country and the more pressing affordability problems for housing.
Is it similar to like the car
industry?
Thank you.
It is a compliment to you and me. There is a correlation to this, right? Because affluent homes, affluent cars, we saw, you know, sales of Mercedes going over the roof. Harley Davidson and those, you know, men who are suffering from midlife crisis, they are buying these kind of things.
Harley would not be very happy with you.
Okay.
Did you guys see that news a while back that Rolls-Royce is trying to launch a quote-unquote car for youths, a price at only a bargain price of 4 million ringgit?
Fresh graduates can buy one.
Okay, coming up to 9 o'clock, where we'll get the opening numbers from Bursa Malaysia in the news bulletin coming up after this. BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.